Welcome to Franchise Festival, where we go in-depth with noteworthy video game series from the last 40 years. For Season 4, we're covering highlights from Capcom's Mega Man. You can follow us on Twitter at franchise_fest, write to us at franchisefestival@gmail.com, and support us at patreon.com/franchisefestival. Patrons get access to a bonus episode each month and have the chance to vote on future episode topics. For this season's bonus shows, of course, we're covering Mega Man spin-offs, adaptations, and spiritual successors. The last one, as of recording, was Mega Man NT Warrior Volume 1, which is a manga adaptation of Mega Man Battle Network. So join the Patreon and you get access to that and much more. As for us, we're your hosts, Chris.
And I'm Hamilton.
And today we're going to be covering the second half of Mega Man Battle Network. It occurs to me, listeners, a quick disclaimer, we strongly recommend going back and listening to Season 4, Episode 8, Mega Man Battle Network Part 1, before listening to this. We aren't going to reintroduce concepts or anything, this is going to be a straight continuation, so you may find yourself lost if you don't go listen to that episode first. And with that, we're off.
So when we last left, we defeated Number Man, mm-hmm. We reset the server, and the re-education video is stopped.
Yeah, the manifesto slash recruitment.
Yes.
Ad. Yeah.
Which leads us to part 3.
Yeah, and these are, it occurs to me, these are our part distinctions. The game doesn't have chapters or anything. We just divided these into parts for our coverage.
Yeah, we broke them up. So if I say part 3, part 4, just know that's from us, just to kind of, you know, categorize the game.
Feels right.
So after school, Lan goes to downtown to visit his dad via the metro. The trains aren't running, though, because the security system was hit by a virus.
Ah, landslide. Mm-hmm. Just like Fleetwood Mac said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have to access the portal in Lan's house and re-explore it, discovering that we need Dex's permission to progress.
This drove me up a wall.
Mm-hmm.
This, I recall, being the first portion of the game where it's entirely unclear where you're supposed to go. Mm-hmm. You just get confronted with a, you can't go in here, message, and then you can theoretically click a button to have Mega Man give you tips for where to go, mm-hmm. and he does not give you any useful tips for this.
Yeah.
So I had to look up a guide to figure out what to do during this section, and this was a grim harbinger of things to come.
It is, and this is what this game kind of suffers from. Less earlier on, more so heavily, with just loss of direction, and just being a slog. In this case, I also had to look up a guide. I remember doing this the first time I played it, because I just don't know what to do.
Yeah, I think this is where I stopped when I played it back in the early 2000s, on an actual mm-hmm. Game Boy Advance, way back when.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got to this part, and I don't know if I feel like I was playing at my grandmother's house or something, somewhere where I didn't have access to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, well, that's that. Yep. I guess I'll just never finish this game. So this is a real escalation, not in terms of difficulty, mm-hmm. but in terms of incoherence.
Yeah. So Lan talks to Dex, and that allows us to challenge Gutsman in battle. Mm-hmm. Once we beat him, we get the Gutsman battle chip and permission to access Dex's area of the network.
Yeah, and this, as we talked about last episode, this battle chip is clutch. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Yeah. As you go through this area of the network, eventually you're going to run into the boss, Stone Man. Just a big old stationary rock golem. doesn't move.
Nope.
He builds stone cubes that stop your movement. And he will drop rocks on 3 squares at a time, so you just have to watch where you are and be careful.
Yeah, you get this split second where you see their shadow, mm-hmm. so you have to dodge out of the way if they're landing on top of you.
Not too tough.
Yeah, for my fussiness of this about this area of the game, I think Stone Man is a really cool and imaginative adaptation of Stone Man from the NES games.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was in 5, I think. I want to say Stone Man was in Mega Man.
I think 5. 5. Right?
Yeah. And in that, he's just a big guy made of stone. But here, he looks like he's flipping like Mount Rushmore or something. He's like carved out of the rock of the digital network,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a much more interesting design for the character.
That's one thing about this game, too. I really have enjoyed pretty much all of the redesigns, or like reimaginings.
Me too, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, you eventually beat Stone Man, and leads to our part 4.
Yeah, that resolves the landslide.
Mm-hmm.
Huzzah.
So now we take the metro line to the government complex, the place where mm-hmm. dad's lands work. to the place where Land's dad works.
Dad's local area network. Dad's land. At the government complex. Yeah. Dr. Hikari, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When we get there, we discover the building is a giant waterworks operation.
You've got your government bureaucracy and your local dam all in the same facility.
It makes sense, probably.
What could go wrong?
Lee goes inside and finds his dad. And we find out he's a famous scientist who invented the PET. He's a big deal.
I think I got this wrong. I have this in the notes, and I don't want to make you a liar, Hamilton.
Oh,
This is what's weird, is the way that I read it, he invented it. But upon further research,
mm-hmm.
I believe what we're intended to understand is that Dr. Hikari's father invented it. And he's kind of an analog to Dr. Light in this world.
Mm-hmm.
He appears in later games, apparently. I only found this out from reading the art book, because I've only ever played the first one. But the Dr. Hikari who invented the PET is actually older, because he's the same age as Dr. Wily. That's where the rivalry... Dr. Wily doesn't hate Lan's dad, he hates Lan's grandfather.
Okay. I feel like I got that confused, too.
The localization of this game is at times great, and at times... very weird.
Yeah.
Just take note of the number of dialogue boxes that lack any punctuation.
There's a lot.
There's a lot of weird quirks in here. Mm-hmm. It was still Capcom in the early 2000s, so I'm not entirely confident in my interpretation of this, but that is what I'm going with.
I thought Dr. Hikari, Lan's dad. Okay.
That's what I thought. Yeah, but I guess he just has a grudge against the whole Hikari family because of what Lan's grandfather did.
I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
I guess so. If I'm wrong about this, listeners, let us know.
Yeah. So Dr. Hikari is not in at the time, though we do find out what his father / he did.
Right. Yeah, I should say, when I refer to Dr. Hikari in the notes, I am referring to Lan's dad.
So, yeah. Not a Dr. You know, for all intents and purposes, I'll just call him Dr. Light.
Yeah, Dr. Light.
Grandpa.
Yeah, Grandpa. Gramps. Gramps Hikari.
But Dr. Hikari, Lan's dad proper, is not in.
Yeah.
So we leave a message for him and go home. A month later, Lan wakes up and the water...
I didn't realize this when I was playing, but it's very weird that we go to, like, Lan goes to see his dad, he isn't in, and we're like, well, we'll check back in a month. Like,
well, try it in a month.
What a bleak household.
Right? My brain like malfunctioned for a second there. I was like, oh, a month. Yeah, it was a month. What?
Yeah, it really says 1 month later.
Yep. Lan wakes up and the water in ACDC town. I forgot the name.
Yeah, ACDC.
Town isn't running.
Mm-hmm.
So Yai tells us that a classmate has been kidnapped.
The classic 1-2 punch. Your water's not running and a kid's been kidnapped.
You know, just a typical Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
We go to the waterworks, and we find that it's been clogged up mysteriously. A root professional net battler is there to investigate. What a jerk. So we borrow Dr. Hikari's ID, and we follow him.
Mm-hmm.
After investigating, Lan decides to hide out until the place closes. Lan's very patient. I mean, he waited an entire month.
He waited a month in his house, and then he waits a day in a closet or whatever at the government complex.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of waiting in this game. There's a lot of, like, wander around a while until something happens.
Yes.
Mega Man Battle Network has kind of a problematic plot progression in a traditional narrative sense, but it's a lot more similar to how real life works.
It's like the pacing seems off, but I mean, that's what we would do. Like, if you take a test or if you do something, it's like you're going to be waiting, like, a few weeks.
Yeah, a strange touch of verisimilitude here in Mega Man Battle Network.
Yeah. But after hours, Lan explores and is caught by a lady with colorful hair who tells him to go home. And she just leaves. I mean, yeah, so we're still free to explore.
So we don't.
Well, we all know how contrarian Lan is.
Exactly, yeah. See our bonus episode on NT Warrior to find out more.
So yeah, we explore. Lan jacks into a water cooler. Saying that sentence out loud.
This game has a real mixture of, like, high drama and the most basic, meandering, prosaic elements of daily life. It's, yep. You get it all.
Which leads us to a dungeon. A very cool dungeon. Super
cool. This one's divided up into, like, two parts, which I think is interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's so cool, it has icy floors. I hate ice physics, but I do like the way it looks.
I do too, and this is a very specific implementation of ice physics that you encounter in, like, Zelda games and Pokemon games. Generally games with, like, a top-down perspective, where you'll be moving along and hit a patch of floor and just slide without control until you come to something that halts your progress. Mm-hmm. And so the puzzle is figuring out how to navigate that space, knowing that you can't stop in place. You have to, like... You have to puzzle through where you're going to stop against a wall and navigate accordingly. I actually really like this dungeon, full disclosure.
It's actually not too badly implemented in this game.
Yeah.
There's giant water faucets that, when on, they impede progress until they're turned off. When they're off, they can be turned on to remove ice.
Yeah, it's like you have to turn them on to send the water jet along to remove the ice, and then you have to turn them back off again so they don't just stop you from moving.
In here, we meet Proto Man, the net Navi of the rude net battler we saw earlier. I said his name completely wrong. His name is Eugene Chod.
What did you call him?
Chode.
Okay. Cool. Well, you know, I think that he's such a jerk. You know, he's such a jerk.
It could be.
That's a decent, yeah. Okay.
Now, granted, as a much older person, Chod sounds more likely, so I pronounce it like that. When I was a kid, I definitely say Chode.
Yeah, I think this is a play on words, because you've got, like, Freud... which is, what, French for cold, and then, Chod, which is French for hot, I think.
Maybe?
I think that's what we're getting here.
Okay.
And for, you know, I guess that's, it's a pun in a sense.
Like most names here, kind of a pun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Sometimes they're digital puns, sometimes they're puns on the French language. You know, you never know what kind of pun you're going to get in Battle Network.
I think I like a lot of, like, Japanese games, usually like pun names, so... It follows.
Yeah, and I'm fully here for it.
Oh,
yeah. I'm a real sucker for a pun name.
I'm all here for it. You run to a mini-boss, little ice bears. Well, not little. They're two sitting bears that hurl ice blocks in a line. Kind of similar, what I'm trying to think of. Think Mega Man 8. Once you defeat them, water comes back in AC/DC town, but it's toxic.
Oops.
So you need to find a way to filter it.
Yeah, we're working our way through the entirety of Europe in the 1600s here.
Pretty much. You know, again, good thing Lan's dad is a genius who also works at a dam for some reason. Lan gets mail from Yai telling him that the kidnapped child is named Freud. This is also the same surname as the waterworks chief, which I read as chef for a second there.
There is a cafeteria in the waterworks. You could be forgiven. But yeah, he's the chief.
He only makes cold food.
A lot of gazpacho.
Yeah. They deduce that he was blackmailed into bugging the waterworks. Lan finds the kid in a car near Higsby's new battle chip shop and saves him.
This is the next section that I had to look up a guide for, because you're kind of cast into the wider world with the idea of this kid's missing, find them. And at this point, you have quite a number of very large environments. But it turns out what you need to notice is that one car... In AC/DC town has been added that isn't normally there, and this kid's in the trunk of the car.
I remember this from the first time I played this many years ago, that I could not find this, because I didn't keep an eye out for a stupid extra car.
No.
Once you save the kid, he gives you a handle program, to which you bring, you take the handle back to a faucet in the dungeon, and you open a new path forward.
Yep.
But as you go through the dungeon, you eventually reunite with Proto Man, as he's dueling another Net Navi, who is Iceman.
Yeah, our friend from Mega Man 1.
The redesign with this one is a little interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if I dig this particular one. It just looks odd to me. It looks like a man in a coat.
Like, it's one of those awkward things where the original Iceman's design isn't great. Like, it's just a guy in a parka with big bug eyes.
Yep.
And then this one turns him into a little bit more of like a sprite or a fairy or something like that. Like, he looks a little bit more fantastical in his face.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, what if an imp was wearing a parka? Right? Instead of what if a guy was wearing a parka?
You also find out that Iceman is Dr. Freud's Net Navi.
Mm-hmm.
Chode and Proto Man, get mail from a Net Battler HQ, which informs them that the World 3, it's written as WWW, because that's what shows up in the game.
Yeah, sorry about
but
that.
But we'll say World 3.
Yeah.
Is after the Aqua program, which is a super program.
Yeah, not one of those regular programs.
No, it's super.
The super programs are necessary for the World 3 to enact its doomsday event.
Mm-hmm. World 3 desperately needs them.
Mm-hmm.
With this knowledge, Proto Man teleports away, so you get to fight Iceman.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, man. So it fights us because Dr. Freud thinks that if he stops, World 3 will hurt his kid.
Yeah, understandable.
You know, we understand. He's pretty tough. He builds like a wall of ice blocks that can stop your attacks. And he also chucks ice bombs over that wall that freezes in about a cross pattern on your grid, which is very hard to dodge.
Yeah.
I got caught into this many times.
Like, you've only got 9 squares,
yep.
And if potentially 5 of them are hit with this bomb, you're in a bind.
I got hit more than a few times with this one.
Yeah, me too.
And after the fight, you land shows Dr. Freud the note that shows that his son is safe.
I guess it all moved so fast.
In any case, Iceman unfreezes the waterworks, and Iceman and Mega Man both see Proto Man confronting a clown-like Net Navi named Color Man.
Mm-hmm.
This Color Man belongs to Mad, the colorful lady who talked to Lan after hours in the government complex.
Yeah, who told him to leave.
Who told him to leave and did not make sure that he followed orders.
Yeah, no follow-up.
Yep. Color Man escapes with the Aqua program, which is a super program. Dang.
Yeah.
After jacking out,
mm-hmm.
Lan reunites Dr. Freud with his son.
Yeah, happy ending to that part.
So we see a meeting of 5 World 3 operatives.
Yep.
Among them is a technician who caused Hikari's oven to explode, Mad, and Dr. Wily.
The gang's all here.
And like any good organization, they reference funding problems. Man, this is more real world than I thought.
I love that the World 3 has the exact same problems as everybody else.
Every single other organization has.
Yeah.
You know, they just can't get those grants.
Mm-mm.
For their world domination.
Gotta get a grant writer on staff.
Yep. After Wily leaves, an unnamed operative mentions the life virus. But, you know, they're not supposed to know about it.
Yeah, and I don't remember which of them says this. Like, we find out all of their identities by the end of the game. Mm-hmm. But when I was making these notes while playing, I didn't know who this was.
Yeah, I don't remember.
So, one of them. I don't know. It wasn't Mad or Mr. Match.
Lan, meanwhile, goes to downtown to meet Mail.
Yeah.
Is that how you pronounce her name? Why is my brain having a malfunction?
She's just Mail. That's her name in the game. She's Melu in the comic.
Oh!
Like email? I don't know.
Like email, maybe. Okay.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Not all of the names are puns. Like, right. Mel is kind of a pun, but to what end, I don't understand. Yeah. And Yai simply isn't a pun at all.
It's just a name.
So, and like Dex, it has the cadence of a pun, but right. The best I can come up with is Pokedex, or maybe like hexadecimal.
I was thinking like, I don't know. Interesting.
Some of them are puns and some of them aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, Yai needs a birthday gift.
Telling to stop by an antique store would be the best place to get a birthday gift, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Exploring Dentown mostly involves just going under busy streets via underpasses.
It's like six copy-pasted city intersections with few distinguishing features. I got really turned around here, and it took me a while to get through what was ostensibly an A to B linear progression.
Yeah. Like, imagine, like, what was it? Like, Mario's Missing? Just imagine, in your head, a game that has a bunch of cut-and-paste, like, intersections, houses, etc., and make it as bland as possible. I guarantee you it's going to match what this is.
Yeah, and the frustrating thing is I can envision a version of this area that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's imagine that this game was remade on, like, the PlayStation 5. Like, you could see this downtown area being really cool, like, cyberpunk kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But here it's pretty bland, unfortunately.
Man, if they made, like, a cel-shaded version of a most recent thing today of this, I'd be so down.
Yeah, be still my heart.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
Lan goes to the antique shop, and he's challenged by the clerk, Mew.
Mm-hmm.
Where you face the mini-boss Skull Man from Mega Man 4.
Yeah.
He's a fire user.
Yeah.
But also is a skull user. And also a scythe user.
Skulls, scythes, and fire. That classic combo.
This guy's hardcore.
I don't know about you. This took me maybe a dozen tries to beat him.
I died a few times, yes.
Yeah, and the homing scythes. There's like two of them that move around your nine squares at the same time, and avoiding those while trying to hit him is one heck of an ask.
Yeah. And this is where, in my opinion, it kind of suffers from just the limited screen that you're going to have with the GBA.
Right.
It runs into like the same issue that like the Sonic games did. Kind of any game. Yep. Where it's like, you really need more space visually for me to, like, get where to, you know, things are coming from. I feel like a lot of people would die.
Yeah, it's an interesting challenge. We haven't covered it on the show, but the Mega Man Game Boy games are very similar.
Yeah. In any case.
Right.
Going back to Skull Man, eventually you do defeat him. And you get your network access expanded after winning the fight. Still can't buy a gift for Mai, though.
Yai.
Oop. For Yai. Not Mai.
Old big head herself.
Big old head. Mm-hmm. When he gets back to block 3, Lan sees the automated traffic lights go haywire and two cars blow up.
Yeah, this game escalated to an M rating really quickly.
At least you don't see the bodies.
No, thank goodness.
What you do see, though, is an email that goes out from WWW or World 3, extorting people to buy the World 3's new vehicle program to protect their automated cars. Because they need money. Buy our car insurance.
There's something very, like, very dark and sad about this company trying to, like, enact World War 3 by selling car insurance.
Right. And again, it's so real in an unreal way, because, like, yes. We have to pay car insurance, or else bad things happen.
Yeah, please also attend the World 3 bake sale.
The World 3 bake sale. It's... I love it. Ironically.
Yeah.
I love it.
The villains can't even get their plans.
They can't even get their plans going because they don't have the money.
Everybody's just trying to get by. Yeah. It's a recession-themed Mega Man game.
We all just want food on the table, let's be honest.
Be we evil scientists or net battlers? Everybody needs to eat.
Right? I can't even be, like, a worldwide terrorist in this economy. It's just too hard.
It is, yeah.
So, Lan does his thing and jacks into random devices. In this case, a traffic light.
Yeah, it's like we don't get a proper dungeon in this area. We get a bunch of mini dungeons.
Yeah.
Where you have to switch on red and blue walkways by walking through a node.
And you do just get through and you do end up fixing the lights.
Yeah.
You also eventually run into Matt again, who's trying to sell the program to naive townspeople.
Good lord. She's like one of those poor people waving like a "we buy gold" sign.
It's like those people who are like at Costco or Sam's Club, and they just try to stop you a bit, like, oh,
yeah,
have you tried this program, though? You should try our cell phone service.
Yeah.
You should get these tiles for your house.
Real low-level mischief by the World 3 here.
They would absolutely do that. They would probably flood people's houses and then sell them, like, flood insurance and be like, ah, should have gone with World 3.
No job is too small for World 3.
No job is too... Like I said, you know, the World 3 lemonade stand or bake sale.
But the lemonade's been so watered down.
It's so watered down. Well, if you have to pay for the upgrade to get the better lemonade. Doesn't come cheap, folks. Mail calls us and tells us that she's on a runaway bus, so Lan has to jack into a traffic signal again to stop the vehicle.
Yeah, we briefly stumble into the plot of mid-1990s action thriller Speed.
We do fix the traffic light, but it doesn't really matter, because the bus is going too fast! It just speeds right by it.
Yeah.
How was the runaway bus going to stop at the traffic light if it's a runaway bus? Are they automated?
Yeah, so they are. Okay. As we come to find out over the course of this, and you know, I think we... I have really detailed notes here, and I don't think it's worth going through them
too
specifically. There's a lot of, like, running from traffic light to traffic light to try to stop a bus. Mm-hmm. But the central thing is that the bus is not driven by a person. The bus is automated along with the traffic lights. Mm-hmm. So what they're trying to do is functionally stop the bus in an intersection.
Mm-hmm.
If they, you know, screw the laws of physics and momentum, if they close a traffic... like an intersection behind the bus and in front of the bus,
it'll just
the bus
stop.
Is stuck in the traffic intersection. Exactly.
And see, I was using too much logic because I'm just like, but momentum though. But you know.
Oh yeah, that doesn't exist here.
This is also a game. It's a video game.
Yeah.
In any case, Mad calls and tells us that she's inserted a virus into the bus's gas system that'll cause it to explode. So basically, yeah, Speed.
But yeah, we do eventually manage to mm-hmm. stop the bus. It turns out that Mad is using Color Man, who we encountered in the last dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
Color Man is Mad's net navi.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do manage to stop the bus. Mm-hmm. And Color Man fails to detonate the bus.
Yes.
So that allows Lan to jack in to fight Color Man and save Roll,
mm-hmm.
who, of course, is working on it because Roll is Male's net navi,
mm-hmm.
and so Roll is now in danger.
Which leads us to the boss, Color Man proper.
Mm-hmm.
He's got two big red and blue bowling pins that he uses in the first two columns that move up and down, which blocks attacks.
You have to shoot between them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The blue pin also fires water blasts, while the red pin fires heat blasts.
Yeah.
He also occasionally flings a ball that bounces around the arena.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite boss fights, actually. I think this is,
Yeah.
It really executes well on the Mega Man Battle Network concept, where it's, you know, it's heavily grid-based.
Mm-hmm.
You have to deal with challenges in the boss's side of the arena. You have to deal with challenges in your side of the arena.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also not insurmountable. There's not two balls bouncing around chasing you like there were in the Skull Man fight.
Right.
It manages to feel challenging without feeling oppressive.
Yeah. It's a fair challenge. It doesn't have a lot of things throwing at you, like you said. All in all, pretty fun.
Right.
And as we did mention before, the bus will be saved, and is. And Mail and Lan go to the antique shop so they can finally buy a gift for Mai. After all that, after the life's been in danger and everything, it's just like, we can finally get this present. These kids move past these tragedies pretty quick.
Yeah.
I would need a nap after that.
Yeah, this would be like the worst day of anybody's life. But they're just like, man, you gotta get a birthday gift for Yaya.
Right. They're just like, well, that sucked. Okay, let's go back to getting this present.
Moving on, yeah.
Back at World 3 HQ, though, Wily criticizes Mad and assigns Count Zap to spearhead their Den City takeover efforts.
We're on to the Count Zap era.
We are.
So, many days later, Lan is hanging out at the playground and getting ready to watch The Bon Bunch on TV, which, again, for those of you Mega Man Legends heads out there,
fun
is yet another wonderful reference.
Mm-hmm.
But Lan and his mom get an invitation from his dad to attend a big soiree at the government complex later.
Mm-hmm.
And so Lan goes there. Lan meets his mom and dad, and the three go down to a restaurant, like a cafeteria, in the basement of the government complex, which, of course, is attached to the underwater power station mm-hmm. that runs the waterworks. Dr. Hikari tells Lan that he made Megaman.exe and that it's different from other pets.
Gasp.
Dropping a little dangling bit of foreshadowing, but mm-hmm. before he can say more, he's called away by a pager. There's a public speaker at the dinner down in the cafeteria. However, that public speaker is none other than Count Zap.
Uh-oh.
Who tells the assembled crowd, welcome to our World 3 Party of Death.
I love that you put WWE Party of Death.
Yeah, I guess in my notes it's a wrestling event. You know, you can get... Well, we know that they're strapped for cash. This could be a pay-per-view.
It is, right?
Raise a little bit of funds for the World 3 / WWE.
Mm-hmm.
So Count Zap has his NetNavi Elecman cut power to the restaurant, which seals up the air vents. That's going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And as everybody's having a bit of a tough go of it breathing, Lan takes Mega Man to the nearby power plant, the adjacent connected power plant, to investigate how they can get the power restored before everyone asphyxiates.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little odd. Lan jacks in and gets a warning that Mega Man will be at risk of deletion in the network due to the power outage. And I assume this is making reference to the fact that ideally, if a NetNavi gets deleted, they can be recovered from backup.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, he couldn't be.
I guess all the power's down. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, it feels like it's trying to raise the stakes, but mechanically it can't. Because if Mega Man is deleted, the exact same thing that happens every other time happens here.
Right.
Which is that you just reload the game.
Mm-hmm.
We get a dungeon here in the power plant. We've got these intermittently lit floors with electrical wires hanging off the side of platforms. A lot of this comes down to moving batteries around to mm-hmm. power sections of the map. Funny enough, you've got all of these NetNavis in here in the dungeon too, who you don't know if they're friends or foes until you talk to them. So sometimes you'll talk to them and they'll say, hey, thanks for being here. We'll help out. And then sometimes you'll talk to them and they'll say, like, you die today.
Yeah.
And you'll have to fight them.
Just as random.
Mm-hmm. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
So once the last battery puzzle is complete, power gets routed back to the plant generator, but the power doesn't yet turn on. And that's because Elecman is interfering by downloading the electricity program, which, of course, is another super program needed by the World 3.
Mm-hmm.
Mega Man fights Elecman, who drops lightning strikes on panels. The fight is unwinnable at first, because Elecman heals after you've done enough damage to him.
That caught me by surprise at first. I was just like, why am I dealing literally no damage to this guy?
Yeah, and I'm always a sucker for, like, an RPG battle that has a twist midway through, you know? So I think this is pretty neat.
Oh, yeah.
So we get a brief dialogue sequence where Elecman reveals that his electricity source is what's healing him. So we cut back to Lan in the real world, and we find the electrified generator shut it down and remove Elecman's power source. Lan miraculously survives this brief encounter with intense electricity.
Good for you, Lan.
Yeah, Lan, he's unstoppable, baby. So we cut back to the second half of the fight with Elecman,
mm-hmm.
where now Elecman can't heal, but he can drop three pylons into the arena that send electricity between them until Mega Man destroys them. So you're kind of dividing your time in this fight between destroying the pylons and focusing damage on Elecman. It's a pretty cool fight.
Mm-hmm.
After the fight, Proto Man appears and tells Mega Man that they were planning to follow Elecman to the World 3 hideout. But since Elecman was destroyed, it's impossible now.
Uh-oh.
Maybe you could have told us that before the fight, Proto-Man.
Just maybe.
Anyway, Elecman is able to beam the electricity program to Wily before he's defeated. And this makes Chod so mad that he has Proto-Man fight Mega Man.
Of course.
Proto-Man just uses sword attacks, but he hits like a truck. At this point in the game, I had 300 HP as Mega Man, but Proto Man's attacks could take me out in two hits.
He's super strong.
He is. I have no idea how you're supposed to do this. I turned on the Max Buster cheat in the Legacy Collection version and just, you know, wiped him out. So after the fight, Mega Man and Proto Man discuss their operators, as Mega Man regards Lan as his best friend, while Proto Man has never thought of Chod that way. So there's this kind of sad emotional moment where Proto Man realizes that he can have more than just like a business relationship with his operator. So Lan jacks out and restores the power to the government complex and then goes home with his mom. I assume they are very happy to get some carryout on the way home rather than this utter nightmare that was the soiree at government complex.
Oxygen's pretty good, too.
I know. I love to breathe while I eat. That is one of my favorite parts about eating, is the continuing to be alive.
10 out of 10.
So elsewhere, Wily gloats about acquiring all of the super programs, which he's planning to use to get revenge on one of the Hikaris?
One of them?
Probably Dr. Hikari's dad, the pseudo-Dr. Light.
Yeah.
We get an email from Dr. Hikari, and as a result, go to find Chod and talk with him. Chod's in downtown, just going around hassling people who he accuses of being part of the World 3. Big, like, Spanish Inquisition vibes from Chod. He's trying to get access to the undernet. But, you know, his
the dark web.
Random accosting of... Yeah, the dark web. his random accosting of strangers fails, so he leaves. on the other hand, you catch more flies with honey, so Lan gets access to the undernet by hanging out and talking with Higsby at his shop in AC/DC town. This was very, very confusing to me. We're supposed to access the undernet, but we can't go anywhere in Dentown to do so. And it suggests that you're supposed to go to Dentown. In fact, what we're supposed to do is access the undernet using Lan's home PC, but with a key caveat that you'll get to doors that are locked, and then you need to go out into the real world and find memos to unlock sections of the undernet. These are with two people out in the real world. One is an otherwise undistinguished old man in AC/DC town. The other memo is with Ms. Yuri, who is Lan's teacher, Ms. Marie's twin. The real kicker to this is that you need Mega Man to be at level 35, and you have to have 75 battle chips in your possession at this point for Ms. Yuri to give you the memo. I have no idea how you'd figure this out without a guide.
Yeah. You couldn't. Could you?
I guess the idea is that you just stumble around the internet long enough in the game that Mega Man levels up and you get enough chips. And so if you just stumble around blindly long enough, you'll meet the threshold for Ms. Yuri to give you a memo.
It's so dumb. I think this is one of the times where, when I was a kid, I stopped playing for a while. Even though I had access to GameFAQs, I needed it for previous sections. It's not like I wanted to have to access it, because I still want to, like, enjoy the game for what it is.
Yeah.
But this frustrated the heck out of me.
It's just hard not to feel like the game is telling you, just play some more game and come back later.
Right.
Like, we really want you to hit 10 hours with this, so just go fool around a while. But once we get those memos, we are able to get through the entirety of the undernet. We open the World 3's locks there and arrive at a Guardian Net Navi named Bomb Man, who is one of the less experimental adaptations. He just looks like Bomb Man from Mega Man 1.
He's
kind of a human with chicken features. Yeah. He drops three bombs, which explode after a set amount of time, and you have to blow them up before they explode.
Yeah, a little bit of experimentation.
Yeah, I like this fight again.
Yeah.
A lot of these boss fights in this game are genuinely cool, thoughtful riffs on the central concept. So after the fight, Bomb Man, perhaps not unexpectedly, detonates, which severs the connection to the World 3 headquarters. But luckily, just in the nick of time, Lan gets the World 3 server address. So even though the connection's severed, he has the information on where the server is located. And that's enough of a hint to go off of in our next section. So moving along, even though Lan has no way to use the address, he visits his dad at the government complex to, brainstorm with him.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Hikari, this was a good idea, because Dr. Hikari is able to trace a path to the World 3 HQ, but running the trace will take time, so he sends Lan to train in the meanwhile.
To train.
Heaven forbid there's a section of this game without at least some meandering and nonsense.
Right.
No joke, the next part of the critical path here is that Lan goes home and takes a nap. Which I feel like if ever there was a perfect indictment of the back half of Mega Man Battle Network, it's that sentence.
Yep.
Hikari also plans to send the address to Chod so that Lan doesn't have to assault the World 3 on his own. Elsewhere, we see Dr. Wily tell subordinate Yahoo, who he's kind of like a Dalzim riff from Street Fighter. Wily tells Yahoo that the life virus has been prepared and that the endgame war is about to begin.
Ooh.
Lan wakes up from his nap, and an email arrives from Dr. Hikari indicating that the lab has been located in some isolated mountains near Dentown. When Lan goes into his living room, though, he sees on TV Dr. Wily announcing that he's about to hack satellites using rockets as the opening strike in his war. So the World War III is about to begin. Pretty scary.
W3.
Yeah, if you go around outside, you can find NPCs talking about it, like it's Majora's Mask.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of stuck wondering how to get to that World III headquarters, and who better to answer than Higsby? Our former man on the inside at his shop.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, he's not there, but we find a Metro Line card at his desk. And amazingly, it's a World 3 Metro Line card. It turns out that there's a hidden metro station underneath the courtyard of the local school that you can access using World 3 Metro cards. And, if I may hazard a guess on why the World 3 is short on funds, it could be because they're running an entirely parallel mass transit infrastructure and printing cards to access it for their, like, 6 employees.
Maybe not the best use of funds.
I guess if World War 3 doesn't work out, maybe he can, advertise himself as a transport infrastructure expert. So we take this card to the hidden station. And it sets off an alarm because the card has expired. Again, very prosaic. Like, we gotta up this card with more money.
Mm-hmm.
Very prosaic obstacles to our quest. So we have to travel to Lan's dad to get the card modified. And once we make that baffling expedition, we get back to the station and take the train. Lan arrives at the World 3 headquarters and sees one of Wily's rockets on a hillside ready to be launched up into space at satellites. We also find Higsby and the other two former World 3 members, Ms. Yuri and the old man. I don't think he had a name. Mm-hmm. Tied up inside the base. So Lan unties them, and then we work our way through a series of locked doors that function as mini dungeons. I think this is pretty slick, if I'm being honest. This feels like a callback to how classic Mega Man games use that boss encounter room.
Mm-hmm.
In the real world, once we've gotten through these four dungeons, we get to a locked door with no jack-in point. So we're like, what are we going to do here? However, Dr. Wily is a profoundly vain man. And when we find a gigantic, 10 times larger than life portrait of him in his lab... Of course that's where there's a secret lock.
Mm-hmm.
So we jack into the portrait and get to mini dungeon number 5. This gives us these invisible floor puzzles. I don't think we dwelled on these earlier, but they're very hateful. Earlier we had a dungeon where you have to just kind of fumble around in the dark, and eventually you find your way along the critical path. And so this, you get more of them here, you know? We didn't have enough of that.
Yep.
When we get to the end, we're stuck, but Mail sends in Roll to make a platform, which lets us access and destroy the final lock. At which point, we're confronted by Yahoo's NetNavi Magic Man.
Magic Man.
Hamilton, do you recall if there's a Magic Man in Classic Mega Man? This guy didn't ring a bell to me.
I feel like it's familiar, but it had to have been, like, after 5, probably, right? Or after 4?
I wonder if he's in 7. Maybe he's in 7, or there was, like, a magician guy in the spinoff Mega Man and Bass.
Yeah, there was a Magic Man in Mega Man and Bass.
Ah.
Yep, I see it here.
Ah, there you go. Okay, so you confirmed it?
Yes. Robot Master is a member of King's Army.
Ah, yep, that's Mega Man and Bass.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like King. I wish they had used him in a better Mega Man game.
Right? In a better game? That would have been great.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Magic Man here, for our purposes, looks like a black mage from Final Fantasy, but also has a Plague Doctor mask and red orbs for hands. He's got a lot going on. The fight itself is actually pretty simple. He fires blue flames in a row across the arena while summoning minions. So you have to kind of alternate your fire between defeating the minions and fighting Magic Man. Just when it seems that Magic Man is defeated, though, Wily powers him back up with just a touch of the life virus, and Magic Man incapacitates Mega Man with a blast. So it's looking pretty grim here, but thankfully Proto Man appears and deletes Magic Man. Thank goodness.
Thanks, Proto Man.
I know, yeah, it's about time you did something worthwhile.
Right?
So back in the real world, Chaud appears and gives Lan the Hub.Bat, a program that was given to him by Dr. Hikari. And Dr. Hikari calls Lan and tells him to apply the Hub.Bat to Mega Man. But he warns that the patch will make it hard to use Mega Man. Dr. Hikari tells us that 10 years ago, he was working on a new type of software, the NetNavi, which he wanted to operate independently of the user but still follow their emotions. Dr. Hikari, though, couldn't nail down the last 5% of the code needed for the NetNavi. But then, coincidentally, just at the right time, his wife had twin sons, Hub and Lan. Hub, unfortunately, was too weak to survive, and Dr. Hikari wanted to preserve him somehow, so he used Hub's DNA to make Megaman.exe before Hub died.
Gasp.
Intense stuff for an E-rated game.
It is, though.
Serious stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Hikari changed 0.001% of the code, though, so it's not a perfect twin to Lan. If it was, Dr. Hikari claims, Lan would experience the same harm experienced by Mega Man.
Why would that be a thing?
Why? You know, why would Lan having the same DNA as the code that made up a virtual program cause him to sustain harm?
Right.
I guess you just kind of have to go with it. So, Dr. Hikari explains that patching Mega Man with the hub.dat will save him, but will also make Lan experience the same harm as Mega Man. So there is a risk involved with it. But Lan, being the hero that he is, patches Mega Man anyway. There's another little quirk here where patching Mega Man will make him entirely autonomous and not take orders from Lan. You know, he's his own Mega Man now.
His own Mega Man.
But wasn't he always operating independently?
Yes.
I know we touched on this in the first part, but there's nothing to indicate that Lan is giving orders to Mega Man throughout these games. He's working with Mega Man like a partner.
I mean, they've worked as a team. I mean, they flat out said that with Proto Man. Like, oh, we're just best friends. So, yeah, he's not like a puppeteer or like being puppeted.
This doesn't entirely land. It's like they got the emotional core right here.
Right.
But there are some details around the edges that don't quite come together, unfortunately. So Mega Man apologizes to Lan for not telling him his true identity. He's known the entire time that he's a clone of Lan's brother. Yeah. We find out in the course of this, I forget if it's Dr. Hikari or Mega Man who clues us into it, but we do find out that Mega Man has Hub's memories. He knows who he is.
I did not remember that little part.
Pretty dark.
I knew about about him being the brother, well, dead brother, virtual brother, whatever the case.
Yeah.
Now it makes a bit more sense. So he actually knew.
Yeah, but Lan is not a jerk about this. Lan understands why Mega Man didn't tell him.
Mm-hmm.
So Lan enters the rocket launch room and confronts Dr. Wily as he prepares to fire. Wily tells us his backstory in a monologue. He and Dr. Hikari's father, Tadashi, competed for government funding 30 years ago, and Tadashi won.
That sounds about right.
It continues to be hilarious to me
yep.
that the central conflict of this game hinges on a guy being bad at grant writing. So Lan jacks Mega Man into the rocket, and we get one final dungeon where, I swear, Hamilton, the background looks like a 1996 screensaver. It's like a string of W's making up atoms in the background that rotate as they move across the screen.
That's pretty 90s.
It's just like those toasters floating with wings, you know?
Toasters floating with wings!
Real ones will remember.
Oh, that came back to me. I remember those.
Uh-huh. Just like the pipes auto-generating, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I remember all the classics.
Oh my gosh.
So this dungeon, mechanically, is just a long hallway to the Life Virus. And once we get there, we fight the Life Virus, which, in contradiction to its description, is just a big green demon.
Mm-hmm.
Takes up 6 panels, so it's easy to shoot at.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is that it drops these element-themed flying monsters into the arena, which attack Mega Man and shield the boss. So you can only actually hurt the Life Virus when it has no bodyguards on screen. You have to fight off the bodyguards, and then you get a brief window where you can damage the Life Virus.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose it wouldn't be Mega Man without a tough final boss.
Yeah.
So after the Life Virus's defeat, Mega Man jacks out, and the lab self-destructs with Wily inside. That's probably the end of him.
It has to be.
Yeah, they wouldn't make 5 more games in this series.
Right?
Meanwhile, Lan and his friends escape back to AC/DC Town, and with a crowd gathered, Lan and his friends and family chat about their adventure, which I think is a really sweet end to this.
Mm-hmm.
Lan still can't see that Mel is into him. She has a crush on him, and everybody gets a good laugh at his expense.
Of course.
But our last little note here, our last little grace note, is that the Hikari's house alarm goes off, so Lan and Mega Man head off to their next mission.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk final impressions, Hamilton. What do you think about this game?
Man, I am so mid-level. Well, I love this game, but I also hate it.
Yeah.
Hear me out.
I will.
I love what they did with the game. I love the idea behind it. I think it's actually a very creative thing.
Mm-hmm.
And especially kind of hopping on the digital age here. What came out in 2001?
Yeah, so it was pretty forward-looking actually for the time.
Yeah. And, really hopping on the digital, growth mm-hmm. of the world. Everything's pretty much automated. You have the net navis who are kind of like the online personas.
Yeah, they're like chatbots, you know?
Yeah, it seems like some are autonomous, some need to be controlled, but internet warfare, there's a philosophical thing here, I'm sure. I like the design. The bosses, I love the redesigns.
Mm-hmm.
I know Bass is in it, and Bass has a pretty cool design, too.
Yeah, he is.
I like the callbacks to Tron Bon / Mega Man Legends.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to like about this game. And you know what? I don't dislike the combat, but now this is going to kind of sink into my issues.
Mm-hmm.
The grid is too small.
Yeah.
There were times where I found myself just getting hit because I thought I was dodging something, and I didn't.
Yeah, the hitbox is a little loosey-goosey, isn't it? Sometimes you move and you still get hit, and sometimes you move and don't get hit. I was never clear on that, yeah.
And to this day, I had the memory of that happening, and I replayed the game, and I'm just like, I thought I got hit, but I moved, and I'm fine. But then I'll, find myself moving into bullets or projectiles, and I'm like...
Right.
I could have sworn I dodged that. And it just got tough. That should be a small thing, but I mean, that is... the battle. That is the system of this game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the introduction of using net navis and using their powers. That's a very interesting way to transition that from the classic Mega Man series.
Right.
So again, I'm just such a roller coaster because I do like it. The level design can be pretty cool, but it suffers from like a lot of games in the past where it's just like there's just no direction whatsoever, and I don't need my handheld. But there are just times where I'm just walking around and there's just no direction. Like, what the hell am I doing?
Yeah, doesn't it seem odd that they included a mitigation feature for that in this game, where you can always tap the like the left shoulder
like
button for input from Mega Man? Right. Like, they knew that that would be a problem,
right,
enough to implement a mitigation effort,
mm-hmm,
but then at least half the time, he just doesn't tell you anything useful.
Right. Like, he'll talk, but it's not like, okay, well, you need to find this kid who's in a freaking car.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah, I seemed pretty mad. Yeah, thanks, Mega Man. Where do I go?
Right. I mean, and again, you don't have to handheld. It could be like, do you think the town looks different? You know, that would have
yeah,
been enough.
You've solved it.
Right.
You've solved it right there.
Like, it would have been enough for me to be like, oh, okay, I'm going to look around the town and be like, oh, there's an extra car. That really infuriated me.
If it sounds like we're overemphasizing how much of a slog that back third is... No, listeners, that we condensed it very heavily for this show. You know, what we described as a series of bullet-pointed events was, for most of the final third of the game, separated by, I would say, good 30-minute chunks of wandering around with no idea where to go and just talking to everybody again and again and again.
Oh, yeah, because most of the time that you're taking is, like, just needless padding, because, like, you either don't know where you're going, or... You're, like, in the net world, or you're doing whatever, and there's, like, random battles, random encounters, going to different parts of a stage.
Every four steps, and there's no way to turn them off.
Oh, that brought me back to the worst part about random encounters, too. I'm like, I just want this level to be done. Stop.
It doesn't add anything. And they solved this. Earthbound solved this.
Yeah.
Earthbound solved this problem in like 1994.
Right.
When you encounter like a weak enemy in an earlier area,
mm-hmm,
they just die immediately. You move on.
Right.
You know, you don't need to relitigate the game's earliest fights, which involve loading into a screen.
Right.
Selecting your cards, firing off shots, seeing the rewards.
See that same stupid reward music over and over.
Ugh.
I was like, and there have been random encounter games, I think like the Final Fantasy series or many others, where they give you like a repellent item.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Where it's like, random encounters will be less.
Yeah.
It's like, that's fine. And this one, but again, I don't, and this is why I want to bring it back, because I don't want to dig into it too much, because there is a lot to like in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I would strongly advise, besides the random encounters, which might drive you crazy, play with a guide.
Yes, that's the way to do it.
Just have a guide open. Don't, like, the second you feel annoyed, go ahead and bring it up. Don't try to figure it out too long, because it's not an interesting enough game where it's worth going through the headache of trying to figure things out when there's no direction, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's not like it's a logic puzzle that you'll feel rewarded for having puzzled through. It's
right.
Just... Ah, I didn't think that pixel graphic that hadn't changed in the previous 6 hours required me to click on it this time.
All of a sudden changed.
Yeah, none of them are rewarding puzzles.
Right. So, final impressions. Would I give this game a shot? Absolutely. You know, pick up the Legacy Edition and give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
But don't be shy about having a guide. I think you'll have a much better time, so you can enjoy all the ups without as many lows.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How about you, Chris?
I hope I don't disappoint anybody, but I have very little to add to what you said. you and I are in full synchro mode for this, if you will. again, another reference to that bonus episode. That's a real load-bearing bonus episode for this podcast.
It really is!
Everybody, go read Mega Man NT Warrior. I don't know. This game puts its best foot forward in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
The audiovisual presentation is really, really good, especially for like a Game Boy Advance game.
Oh yeah, the music's pretty good.
Yeah, the music's great.
Mm-hmm.
The dungeons are kind of interesting because architecturally they're pretty uninteresting, but it's offset by pretty cool background designs and good music.
Mm-hmm.
The individual enemies as well are really well animated. and generally have a really cool central concept yes. to them. You know, an enemy will have a function.
Like, the sprite work in this game is solid.
It is. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And this may be the height of Mega Man enemy function design.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I am a real sucker for the visual design of enemies in early Mega Man games, and they stayed good through the Mega Man X era.
Mm-hmm.
But here, every enemy has a very distinctive purpose that they serve. It's kind of like every enemy is a puzzle to be solved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it wears out its welcome in the back half.
Yeah.
Where I fought every enemy, I don't know, let's charitably say 50 times each.
Mm-hmm.
It's just random encounter after random encounter. You can't tell where to go.
Right.
Even reading a guide, you struggle through navigating the dungeons.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I would say this game started out as like an 8 out of 10 for me and mm-hmm. ended up as maybe a 6 out of 10.
I give it a solid 5 out of 10.
Yeah, it's like a 5-hour game that takes 15 hours to beat. I think that's probably the best way to sum it up.
It is.
I will say it's a testament to the game's quality that I intend to play Mega Man Battle Network 2.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the issues here are kind of growing pains, and I think a team with more confidence in their product, a team that isn't as worried about padding it out to make it last for an early console launch, you know, all of those things likely make later games in the series better. They're probably better iterations on the same basic concept, and the basic concept is good.
Yeah.
This is a really strong adaptation of the Mega Man property.
Yeah.
And that's that for our coverage of Mega Man Battle Network. We hope you've enjoyed listening, and encourage you to come back next time for Mega Man Zero. In the interim, consider backing us at patreon.com/franchisefestival, where you get access to a bonus episode each month, and have the chance to vote on future episode topics. If you have any suggestions, you can also drop us a line on Twitter, using the handle @franchise_fest, or email us at franchisefestival@gmail.com. As for us, we've been your hosts, Chris.
And I'm Hamilton.
Thanks for listening, folks. Goodbye.